I want to talk to you about, you know, your role as VP of Hockey Operations. What's on the horizon for Danny Briere? What your aspirations are? Thoughts on the ECHL? Thoughts on Maine? Thoughts on Riley Armstrong, your assistant GM and head coach of the squad as well. But we were just talking before you came on and giving sort of top of mind thoughts on Daniel Briere. And when I hear your name, I think of skill and one of the sneakiest, dirtiest guys at the draw. And I loved it. I loved watching you take faceoffs. And you were one of the beneficiaries, we were making the point, of the new rules that came in after 2004-05. Describe in your words your career after that lockout when the rules changed in the NHL.
Well, the best way I can explain it is my first few years in the league, when I was in the corner fighting for a puck, and if I was able to, you know, get the puck from one of the defenders, finding my way to the net, I had to carry one or two guys on my back. I had to go through someone, you know, with a stick through the stomach, getting punched in the head on the way to the net, where after the new rules came in, you know, they weren't allowed to do that. So there's just more free to attack the net, to go to the areas to score goals. And I realized early on that I wasn't going to score a lot of goals from the outside. I didn't have the power of a shot to beat goalies from 60 feet out. I had to go to the paint. I had to put my nose right in there to find those loose pucks, those rebounds early on. And, you know, with the new rules, gave me more freedom to get to those areas.
Stewie?
Danny, what's your message to the younger players who are worried about size? And, you know, you're a guy that wasn't the biggest guy, but you seem to thrive against, you know, a lot of the bigger players in an era where there was that clutch and grab that you mentioned before.
Well, I tell them it's all about how much you want it. You know, you don't have that excuse as a smaller guy now to say, you know, the big guys are hooking, they're grabbing, there's too much interference. You don't really have that excuse anymore. So it's all about how much you're willing to go to those areas. It's how much you're willing to compete for loose pucks and finding ways to outsmart, you know. And then I think when you're young and you're developing as a hockey player, when you're smaller, you have to find ways around the bigger guys. You know, and now the NHL gives you the chance to keep doing that at the next level, and that's kind of my advice to those young guys. You've got to keep finding ways to be successful, but you have to be willing to compete, and it's how much you want to succeed.
Danny, I think today it's more common for players to be very particular with their gear and for that to be the expected and standard norm. But I don't know how common it was when you played. I know guys were still particular, but I can't let go of a video I saw when Taylor and Tyler were having their draft year. There was a video of you explaining to them about the flex of your stick. And you were explaining how you changed flex throughout the season to go to a lighter flex stick throughout the season. Could you explain to us all just why you did that and what that was about? I always thought that was fascinating.
Yeah, it was I still remember that conversation. It was a lot of fun with, you know, those two young guys at the time who are now our stars in the NHL. But we were just discussing how much being a smaller guy, a smaller player, if I had a super stiff flex, I wouldn't be able to use that flex to send the puck forward. So every time I take a shot, having more flex, I can use the whip of the blade, the whip of the shaft to send or shoot it a little harder. So that's what I figured early on. I was very fortunate when I played junior hockey. I played in Drummondville in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League, and the Coho factory was right in our backyard in Drummondville, and they invited me to their warehouse, and I was able to test flexes for them. And, you know, I would go back to the rink. They'd give me three or four different sticks, and they'd have different flex. And I figured out that way how to work best with the flexes. And that's how I was able to understand better how to use them to my advantage. And that's what I was explaining to Hall and Sagan at the time. And as the season went on, I figured, like, early on when you come out of from your summer training, you're a lot stronger. During the season, you're just trying to maintain your strength, but you lose a little bit of it. So as the season went on, I would lower my flex or have a much bigger flex to try to use that to my advantage.
Well, using the stick, I mean, you were fantastic. I mean, at the draw, passing, shooting, like you had, as we all know, you had wonderful hands. We're talking to Danny Briere. But now as the VP of hockey operations for the Maine Mariners, how do you look at composite sticks now when you go over your stick budget?
That's a good question. It's totally different now. We're trying to, before I was trying to figure the, how to spend more money. Now I'm trying to spend less with our stick budget with the pliers. But the sticks are getting so good compared to what we had. There's a lot more consistency with the sticks. But definitely the stick budget is a major issue. I think if you talk to any trainers, any executive in the NHL, one of the big things that they complain about is the stick budget.
What has been some of the, because you've made like a really nice transition here now as the VP of hockey operations, and anytime we talk to anyone about Daniel Briere, the whisper is always going to be a general manager in the NHL one day. That's the career path that that Danny Briere is on. How has the transition been for you, and what are some of the more eye-opening things that you've gone through now in the couple of years?
Well, it was very interesting. When I retired, I was thinking, how am I going to stay? I want to stay in hockey. Where am I going to go? And I was thinking of, maybe coaching, maybe player development, maybe scouting. There's media as well. So there's all these options. And then one day, Paul Holmgren invited me and he decided to offer me an opportunity with back with the Flyers. But what was surprising, it was totally unexpected, is it wasn't on the hockey side, it was on the business side, to learn how things work on the other side. It took me by surprise, but it's been amazing. What I'm learning every day about, things that you don't think about when you're a player. You don't think about marketing, you don't think about social media from the business side of things. You don't think about ticket sales or corporate sales. Now it's data analytics is a big thing. So I'm learning every day. I feel it's something that challenges me on a daily basis to learn that stuff because, I didn't go to school for it growing up. I didn't have the chance to spend a lot of time in the front office when I played. So it was very challenging, but I'm getting more and more comfortable. The fun part is I get to still be involved on the hockey side with the Mariners, so I get to learn on the business side with the Flyers and then put it to work on both the business and the hockey side with the Mariners because it's the same ownership, Comcast Spectacor, that owns the Flyers and the Mariners. So it's been a lot of fun, very challenging, but I'm enjoying it. And the way I see it is, I'm trying to live in the moment. I don't know what's going to happen in the future. I'd love one day to climb up the ranks, but at this time I'm still in my learning process and trying to learn as much as possible about the overall picture of an organization.
Do you ever hop on the ice in practice with any of the Mariners players? I would imagine if I'm, player X playing with the Maine Mariners and I'm struggling taking faceoffs and there's Daniel Briere watching from the stands, I might be tempted to say, hey, can you drop a few pucks for me here, Danny, or maybe show me a couple of things?
I jumped on the ice here and there, but at the same time, I try to be very, very careful. I have a great coaching staff in Maine, starting with Riley Armstrong. Some of you guys know him. Yep. I think Jeff got some swag from Riley earlier. So he's a tremendous coach. I've been super happy with him. I think he's going to climb up the ranks, and we're going to see him in the NHL eventually. But I try to be careful to not take away anything that he's doing from the player. So I stay away from any system work with the players, during practice. After practice, if some of the guys want to talk about different skills, different things to improve their development, that's when I'll stay around and work with those young guys. But I try to be respectful of what the coaching staff is trying to do.
Danny, you're 100% right, and full disclosure, I did wear my Maine Mariners dry fit during my workout this morning, and if there are any other hockey teams out there that think they can bribe me with dry fit athletic wear, you're 100% right. Stewie, over to you.
It could be pretty unmotivating for some players that are sent down to the East Coast Hockey League. Do you have a hands-on approach with any players that may be on NHL deals that are down in the East Coast Hockey League? Do you have any approach to those players in regards to motivation to getting them back to the AHL or possibly the NHL?
Oh yeah, you're totally right about that, and we see it from both sides, because we get guys sent down from the American League, and those guys are disappointed, they're frustrated, because they see they're getting away from their NHL dreams. So it's really tough to get them back on track. I try to share my experiences. I spent 3.5 years in the minors when I turned pro before I got to be a full-time NHLer. So I try to share those experiences that I went through myself. But on the flip side, we also have some guys coming from the SBHL, which is a level below the ECHL. And those guys are super hyped up. They're super excited because they're getting closer to their dream. So we get two sides of it. And obviously it's a lot tougher when you see those guys being sent down and in the dumps, and you have to try to make them understand that this is just a bump in the road for you. The better you play at our level, the faster you're going to get back up to the American League and hopefully the NHL one day. So that's what we try to make them understand. But it's tough. It's tough to see the disappointment in some of those guys. But what I've been very impressed with is how good the ECHL has become. I remember 20 years ago when I played in the minors, and we would see guys come up from the ECHL. There's a lot of horror stories. There was a lot of bad karma around the league. But what has been done with that league in the last 10, 12, 15 years? I was pleasantly surprised in how good the players are, the league is, how competitive the hockey is, and those guys are not that far from the NHL.
This I may be way off base here, but this is just coming from a fairly average hockey player in my own right. But for someone who thinks the game like you did and like you do, is there challenges in getting other people to understand what you're trying to teach them? Like, if you go on the ice with a kid in the ECHL and you're trying to show him something, do you struggle to pass on what you saw? Like, I imagine Wayne Gretzky can't just go tell someone how to play like Wayne Gretzky. Do you feel that challenge that is tough to share with players who aren't as good as you were?
Yeah, it's a constant reminder that I give myself to make sure that we're all on the same page, that I'm not overseeing things here and there. And it's a good point that you brought with Gretzky, because when he started to get involved with the Coyotes was at the time when I was up and down between the minors and the NHL, and Wayne would come on the ice here and there to practice with us after he had retired. And I still remember sitting there, and we would be practicing the power play, and I was thinking, Wayne must be just rolling his eyes, trying looking at us, trying to make plays, and he's probably thinking, we have no clue. But like I told you earlier, it's the constant reminder that I give myself to make sure I'm on the same page as these guys. Don't try to complicate things too much. But at the same time, like, these guys are athletes. They're so good nowadays. I've been really surprised at how good the talent at the ECHL level is.
You mentioned Riley Armstrong a couple of moments ago with Daniel Briere, former NHLer, Maine Mariners, VP of Hockey Operations in the ECHL. I have all the time in the world for Riley Armstrong. I think he's a heck of a coach as well. And, this Maine Mariners squad, Riley really had this thing grooving down the stretch, and this was a team that was looking to do some damage in the playoffs. How disappointing or how challenging a call is that, Danny, saying, hey guys, sorry fellas, looks like that's it for the season?
Yeah, I mean, I was devastated when I got, I was on the call with the ECHL when we decided to terminate the season, and then I had to talk to Riley. And then the players. So it was a lot of a few bad phone calls in a row. But Riley has done a tremendous job just from year one to year two, the way he improved himself as a head coach. You know, when I got this job and I was looking for a head coach, there was a lot of good hockey people around, but his name kept coming up from different people telling me that this is the guy that you want. This is the guy that's going to climb up the ranks. And I've been really, really happy with his development as a coach, the way he treats people, the way he can do everything. You know, at the ACHL level, a head coach is not just out there cutting videos and, you know, implementing system for his players. There's a lot of psychology that comes into it. We talked about it earlier with guys being sent down. There's a lot of stuff off the ice that needs to be done. You're in charge of the apartments for the players, the travel, the buses, the hotels, because you don't have all the extra hand like you have at the NHL level. So Riley has been on top of everything, and he's continuously improving as a head coach. So this is a name you guys have to keep in mind in the future. You'll see this guy climb up.
Don't worry, his brother will keep reminding us, Danny. Don't worry, we work with Colby. We'll never forget Riley's name. I do want to ask you about, you know, this is a really unique situation with the Maine Mariners because it's owned by Comcast. Of course, you know, the owners of the Philadelphia Flyers, they already have their own ECHL team. So the Maine Mariners are affiliated with the Hartford Wolfpack, who is the AHL affiliate for the New York Rangers. So your dealings, I'm guessing, would be more with a former teammate on the Buffalo Sabres and Chris Drury than anyone else?
You're right. It is, and it sounds kind of weird when you're thinking about, you know, Flyers own but affiliated with the Rangers. It just sounds weird. but the Flyers at the ECHL level are affiliated with Lehigh, with Reading, which is about, you know, 40, 45 minutes from Lehigh Valley, their American Hockey League team. So when you think about all the scouts and the player development coaches and players getting called up or sent down, it just makes it a lot easier being so close. So that made sense for the Flyers to stay affiliated with Reading. And then when we started looking at different options for affiliation, Hartford came up. You know, and my relationship with Chris obviously probably made it easier. We knew each other really well to make it work. And I think at first, the first phone call, Chris thought it was going to be a joint affiliation with the Flyers, and he wasn't too open to that. but when he realized that no, it was strictly for the Rangers, and then we would be working together. So on the hockey side, I do work with Chris Drury, but on the business side, everything is handled on the Flyers financial side.
One final thought before we let you go, and you're being very generous with your time. We thank you. Daniel Breer is our guest. I want to ask you about that Buffalo Sabres squad because that was just a flat-out fun team to watch. Yourself and Drury and Thomas Vanek and Pominville and Derek Roy and Brian Campbell and Ryan Miller could go on and on and on. It looked like, you know, watching that Sabres team play, and you see this every now and then with squads when they finally hit their stride, it just seemed like hockey was fun for you guys when you were out there.
Yeah, we had a really tight group to start with. But what happened there, too, is when we came out of the lockout with the new rules, we had a team that was built with speed to start with. And Lindy Ruff, I have to give him a lot of credit. Lindy Ruff came into camp after the lockout, and he said, guys, while everybody's going to complain and trying to adjust to the new rules, we're going to get ahead of it. So from day one in training camp, we started watching video on what would be called. We would watch videos on how to take advantage of the new rules. We worked on our special teams, power play and penalty kill, probably more than I had ever been in my career up to that point. Every day we would do special teams for 40, 45 minutes. So because Lindy knew that we would be getting 5, 6, 7 power plays a night. And that's how we were able to build our confidence. So early on, even ourselves, we didn't know what kind of team we had, how good we could be. But getting or building that confidence just from getting ahead of the curve with the new rules gave us a lot of confidence, and it built and got bigger and bigger. And, you know, we probably played better because of the swagger that we had just from starting ahead of everybody with the new rules. So I thought we have to give Lindy a lot of credit. But you're right when you said, it seemed like fun. We had a blast. We were loving it. We had a really tight team. And those 2 years, it was, I thought we had a chance, a real chance of winning the Stanley Cup there. So, unfortunately it didn't happen the second year that year we got hit by a lot of injuries in the playoffs, but, it was still a lot of fun.
It was, from this perch, just watching from my couch. It was one of the more entertaining teams to watch coming out of the 04-05 lockout. Danny, thanks so much for stopping by today. We really appreciate it. Thanks for sharing some of your thoughts on the league, your career, the Maine Mariners, and Riley Armstrong's future as well. Thanks so much for stopping by. Look forward to chatting when the NHL, the AHL, and the ECHL are back on the ice.
Well, thank you, guys. And I want to say thank you to you guys for keeping the word going and keeping us entertained during this tough time. So thanks for what you're doing as well.